Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Philosophy with Farron. We are on to week two of the Anatomy of Life workshop that she has designed. And let's just do a quick recap, Farron. What did we talk about last week in week one?
Well, last week we talked about the first chakra and our connection to your foundation or the beginning of you. And all of the connections that basically make up your physical body and the creation of everything that supports that. So the foundation being even your physical home and that reflection of that and your physical body, the bones, the muscles, the energy of gravity, and how those building blocks really help to create a container for everything that you do in your life, from basically like building a house from the bottom up, and knowing that we are constantly needing to feed that vessel and take care of it.
Right, right. Well, and I believe you also walked us through the three-part breath. So for those of you listening, when you're done this one, you may want to backtrack a little bit, head back to episode number one, and give that a listen as well. So now we're on to week two. So how do you pronounce this particular chakra?
This one, the Sanskrit word for it is Svadhisthana. So the W is like a V, or Svadhisthana.
Okay.
And it's actually funny, the words or the Sanskrit names, that the Sanskrit language actually comes from more of the tone and how it feels in your body and how that affects different areas of your body. So I find that each of the chakra names have such a resonant feeling when you say them and when you get the pronunciation of them. And like Muladhara, it's very grounded and masculine. Yeah. And Svadhisthana, now we're into the pleasure center. So this is the water element. And just saying Svadhisthana, it's very like feminine and fluid. So yeah, it's really interesting the different frequencies or the resonance of our own voice, and the Sanskrit language, how old it is and where those words have come from. So once you get to know it a little bit, it took me a little while and lots of practice to just learn how to say it, kind of like learning a new language. But
absolutely. I can never remember. So at least now we have recordings where you're saying them and I'm like, okay, well, that's how you say it. So this one is, you said the pleasure center, and you've written here dwelling abode of the self. So then we're into hands, taste. So last week was smell. And then we have the liver, lymph, pelvis or hypogastric plexus, water element, connection or belonging, and then self-analysis or journaling. So how does that all tie in? So let's go with hands first. Why hands?
Well, so I'm going to go back a little bit.
Okay.
Give a little bit of a starting point or a reference point to make it a little simpler with this chakra. So we talked last week a little bit about planting the seed and needing the proper environment for that seed to grow. And just like your body needed its environment for it to grow in the mother's womb, it had this amniotic fluid, mm-hmm. In the mother's womb, and that's kind of the salt water that our body actually grew in and needed that in order to grow. So we're moving into the water element now in the second chakra, and the water represents not so much the physicality and that gravitational pulling force, but now those atoms and molecules are beginning to mold and bend and become water. Right. And so within that, our bodies are beginning to expand a little bit more into the mobility, the joints, the fluids are starting to be created, and the movement itself, understanding that we are born to move and to sense and to be in this environment, kind of like an ocean,
right,
where we're all connected in some respect. And so coming into the, we call it the organ of action, right, of the hands for this chakra, mm-hmm. We have a bunch of energy points or nerve endings on the hands and on the bottoms of the feet, and they all connect to all the glands and organs in the body. And you may have seen, some of you may be familiar with what's called mudras, and they're, that translates as a hand gesture. So when we connect in meditation, you might see people put their thumb and index finger together and have that resting on their lap. And what that's doing is it's creating a cycle or a connection of energy that sends a message to the brain saying, okay, it's time to relax. So there's a...
Oh, I knew that. I never knew why it is that it's that people are depicted with doing that.
Yeah, it's okay. There's a huge science behind the hand positions, and you'll see a lot of the Hindu traditions and their statues, they all have some form of hand gesture that they're doing, and each finger represents a different aspect. Like, you know, we wear our ring or a wedding ring on our fourth finger, that's your commitment finger, and your index finger, your pinky finger is your compassion finger, and your thumb is your nurturing finger. So there's a whole background and science behind a lot of what different parts of your body basically represent psychologically.
Yeah.
But going back to the physiological aspect of that, because it connects to all of the glands and organs in your body, the water element, or that connection of your environment and putting things kind of uniting, is a big word for the second chakra. It's about the union, knowing that those molecules, they're not broken apart yet. They're still molded and together, but they're moving now. They're not rigid and making something solid. It's when things start to move and bend. And so when we unite those fingers, or we place our hands, or we touch something, say, you know, we're feeling something really soft or textile type of feelings with our hands, it can be really calming and really nurturing in that respect. Or if somebody takes their hand and kind of just, you know, rubs your hair, or, you know, pats you on the back, or circles your heart, or, you know, that touch is very nurturing and comforting.
Right. Well, and that's interesting because you know, my son, he was diagnosed with a mild form of autism when he was younger, but touch is one of those things. I mean, emotions are not something that they express on a regular basis, and in fact they have a hard time identifying it in others, but touch is one of those things that they use to kind of bring them back, to kind of ground them a little bit. Seems to calm them. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if it's maybe they're using that as a gateway to dealing with the sacral chakra. Mm-hmm. But that's interesting. Well, also there's the lymph system. So you talk about movement, right? But your lymph system has no pump of its own, right? It solely relies on the muscle movements of your body.
Yeah, that's right. So the lymph carries the white blood cells through your body, and your white blood cells are used to heal different diseases and imbalances. Or say you have a cut on the bottom of your foot, the white blood cells get a message to head that way to help heal that wound. And the thing is that those white blood cells, they need the lymph fluids in order to get there. So if we're not in movement, if we're stagnant and we sit for long periods of time and we just don't really move our body very much, it has a tougher time to be able to heal. Really, ultimately, those white blood cells, it's going to take a lot longer. They'll get there eventually because you're still breathing, and that breathing is creating movement internally. But you have sites of lymphocytes underneath your armpits and behind your knees and in the crease of your hips and different areas where those live. But to travel them into the different parts of the body, movement's necessary. And that's where the connection comes, where we are when we're in movement, like water, it's constantly moving. It's never still. Then we're able to feel a lot more at ease in the body. We're able to just move that energy, move the sense of you know, stiffness and stagnant thoughts, and even the emotion. And we kind of get into that part of it too, where this the water element also connects to the feelings and emotions of our.
You said in the very first podcast recording that we did, you know, we are not our emotions, they move through us, right? So there's that fluid aspect.
Yes, absolutely. Emotions, I call it E-motion. Energy in motion. Yeah, yeah, so it's really important, and the dance aspect comes into this one really prominently, or even just the movement, the flow of yoga, or even walking, or, you know, rolling your arms and creating movement just in any way that feels good for your body and gets you up and going and feeling those emotions, but not holding on to them or not getting kind of stuck by them or blocked by those emotions, and letting them just move through your body like water wants to move.
Right. Well, and this is where we get into like the pelvis, the hypogastric plexus area. So the pelvis is quite essential to being able to
absolutely
move.
And it holds you up. So the muscles in the pelvis, like the psoas muscle, actually helps. It's the reason why you're upright or able to be upright, so it's very stabilizing as well. And the pelvis itself, when you are moving and dancing, you'll notice that, I mean, if you didn't have a pelvis, like anything in your body, everything's there for a reason, as we know. But your pelvis is kind of the mobility, or help, it creates that mobility. And it also, if you think about it, your pelvis is the container for when you were in the womb. So it is like a bowl, the pelvis, structure. I see it as a bowl, and there's water swishing around that bowl, and it allows that mobility through all the way, connecting you and uniting you to your lower body, up into your belly and into your heart and into your upper body. So it kind of creates that union in that respect as well.
And so what's the difference between the hypogastric plexus and just the regular solar plexus?
So the hypogastric plexus, it's more of a response nerve or monitoring, and it directs many of the secondary aspects of digestion, such as absorption of the nutrients from the intestines. It's very receptive to all the internal processes and provides the subconscious feedback to your brain. So it's more of a response mechanism. I mean, your whole body's a response mechanism, but this one deals a lot more with kind of the hormonal response that and how it connects to the brain that way.
Okay, so let's talk about, we've covered the water element. Let's talk about how it relates to connection or belonging. So this is, I guess this is your reaction to our social world or our environment, right?
Yeah, so going back to kind of the concept of being in the ocean of this society that we live in, the water element itself, it's that bonding, that connecting, and we as humans, we are here. That's step number one, to claim that you're here and that you're physical and you exist, and the fact that you're breathing, you've succeeded at something. And so we're not here alone, and there is a reason for that. And the fact that we're in this ocean together, we're in, and I say ocean, like the entire humanity that we live in, there is a reason why we're all here at the same time. And the fact that we have a ability to connect on a feeling spectrum to the people around us, when we don't, for whatever reason, way back when these chakras are developing, we were born with all of them. Just remember that you weren't born just with one chakra, just your first chakra. You're born with all of your chakras, but they're developing and they're learning along the way as you grow. So this is from age 2 to 4 is a big part of the developmental process for the second chakra. And so when we're feeling this sense of or we feel like we don't belong to something, we've kind of lost touch into the essence of where we are. So claiming where you are, understanding where you belong within that. It's really about your ability to unite to what's important to you, what feels good to you, how you can connect to, going back to, you were in your mother's womb connected by that umbilical cord that was feeding you everything that you needed at the time. And there was no sense of not belonging mm-hmm. to something when you were in the womb. And so when you disconnect and you cut that cord to your mother, you're now having to establish that sense of connection or that sense of belonging in some way to something within your environment. And so feeling safe is number one in your environment. If that hasn't been a safe place for you when you were coming out of the womb in that first chakra stage.
Right. Well, and it's that you're only born with two fears, the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises, and everything else you kind of develop. So that would definitely be a result of being born, cutting that umbilical cord. And then that's also part of the learning process,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. So we're adapting constantly. And the sense of adaptation is really at play here, where we can be in somebody's presence and, feel what they're feeling, but not be kind of taken over by it or even claim it as our own, and being able to understand this kind of goes into the self analysis and self journaling called Dhyana Yoga, to be able mm-hmm. to know what are your emotions, what's happening, what's your story. And then when we connect to somebody else and we're feeling something, maybe because we're in connection to them or we're having a conversation with them or mm-hmm. we're in the same room as them, we're going to automatically feel different feelings because they're triggering those aspects of yourself. And it gets confusing when we don't really understand how to deal with that or how to even ask the question, is this mine? Is it something that I need to hold on to? Where is it taking me? What's my story? Where's my trauma? You know, all of the aspects of feeling that we sometimes are afraid of going into. Nobody likes to feel sad or afraid or anxious or whatever that feeling is. So taking the time to use your emotions as information is really important. And that's where the practice of self-analysis and even painting or journaling, some sort of work with your hands to mm-hmm. help those move, and dance movement to help you become more clear with what your emotions are and to not be afraid of them, and also know that nobody else can give you the emotion. Nobody else can, if someone's feeling angry in a room and you're like, oh, that person, I'm feeling some bad vibes off of that person over there. It's not about that they're attacking you or, that you're being affected by them in a negative way. That might be the case, but what you do with that, how you respond to that, how you adapt to that so that you're not plowed over, then that's the important part of the practice, is to be able to sit in that, to be in the ocean, to go with the flow, and to allow all of those emotions to just move through you, and you don't have to create a story with it.
Well, and that's just it. I think we allow ourselves sometimes to become overwhelmed by certain emotions. Mm-hmm. And as such, I find that people tie intuition to this particular chakra. And can sometimes get it confused and start to own another person's state of mm-hmm. being.
Yes. Right?
So and that's where we can also then start to, I guess, it's about the pleasure center, right? But we can also take it to the extreme. So we're just like our bodies. We're always trying to return to our own homeostasis. What feels comfortable. Mm-hmm. But what happens when we take it too far and we're constantly, indulging in the pleasure center?
Right. So this center is also the place where we need to work with addictions and attachments to those pleasures. So it's really easy to have coping mechanisms because those feelings, we haven't really understood them growing up. And then when they get triggered as an adult, if we haven't dealt with them, then we're going to reach for substances that basically check us out of being in our body. And that's, again, the big reason why being stable and aligned and grounded in your physical body is important. And this is the water. When we plant the seed, we have to add the water to that seed to nourish it so that it can grow and it can come to its full potential. And so if we were to overwater that seed, when the seed's, you know, craving something, and then we don't really tune into to what that seed really needs, when we just think, well, it just needs more water, needs more water, needs more water. It's not growing. Why is it not growing? You know, we make those assumptions, and then we just use whatever we've learned we think should be the answer to something. It's not water for us, it's, you know, it's sugar or things that bring that sense of sensuality or pleasure or comfort, nourishment, kind of like a baby, right, you know, sucking on its soother, because that milk and from the bottle, that's where it found its nourishment. And then that transition, they still need some sort of memory trigger in their brain that says, I'm still getting what I need. Even though there's no milk in that soother, they're still getting that action. So we are doing that with food, with drugs, with sex, with a lot of different aspects of finding that nourishment or that pleasure. And when we become disassociated with what's safe or what feels like we are okay to have this feeling in our body without going crazy or, you know, falling into a deep dark hole and not knowing how to get out of it. We go to these substances that feel like they're creating some form of what I can say, false sense of security. And so coming back into our own senses and taking the time, and really the sense of taste is associated to this chakra, because when we take that time two things. Number one, eating and food has become it's not so much anymore, but we sit down with our family or our family friends, mm-hmm. or we gather and we eat, we, you know, have potlucks, and we really use food as a sense of connection. And then also, if we're just eating mindlessly and we eat, and then, or if we're dealing with something emotional and that's really challenging, we'll go and we'll want to eat just to distract us from dealing with that. So the practice is to slow down, use your deep breath. That's going to stimulate those senses of taste and really give you the full experience of, say, that one bite of cheesecake as opposed to 50 bites of cheesecake. You're gonna know after 3 bites, your body's gonna say, that was extremely satisfying. And then you're gonna be able to say no to the rest of what you really don't need. After that, it's really more just, it's mindless after that, or it feels like, oh, I'm not going to get more of that, so I better eat it all now. And that can be also entrained from, say, you have a big family, and if you didn't sit down and eat all of it, you may not have gotten more later. So
that's really important. Well, and that's basically teaching a scarcity thinking.
Yes. Right? Yep.
Interesting. Okay, so going back to the self-analysis and journaling, so is journaling something that you typically take people through during the workshop, or is it something like some sort of homework that they're given afterwards?
So journaling is a part of the whole process, actually, through each of the chakras that we are working on. It's a really good practice to get into. So a lot of times we have a lot of questions and a lot of thoughts that float around when we're dealing, and we're getting a little more, we're getting deeper into the feeling realm of our body. So the journaling basically helps to move those thoughts and just put them somewhere so that they're not cycling and circling within your body. and within your mind and kind of creating the same story over and over again. So I find with journaling, when we put words on paper, when I put words on paper and I just write what I'm thinking, or if I'm having a trouble with something and I want to reach out, say, go eat something, or I want to call a friend and just, you know, talk about what I'm thinking about, and it may not be productive, I'll put those words on paper. And then a lot of times in my writing, I'll come to clarity just by doing that, just by putting it somewhere. And I'll read back, or I'll look back, and I'll see some patterns, or I'll see some different, you know, connections that I can make, that by just get moving it, by putting it somewhere other than in my brain, that I'll create that flow or clarity in some respect. And it also, for this one specifically, with the second chakra, we get more into automatic writing. So even though you may not know what to write, it's not about forming those structured thoughts. It's kind of like painting a picture or doing art. You just take the paintbrush, you pick a color, don't think about the color, just kind of start putting some color on paper and then see where that takes you. And really just use the ability to just go with the flow, unbounded, and just let whatever comes out just come out. And so your words may be, I don't know why I'm writing this right now. I'm just going to write on this piece of paper because Farron told me this is what I should do. And then you just keep writing until something forms, and it may or may not. But the fact that you're putting your attention on something that's in movement is just another form of expression and movement itself.
So it would be a way of sort of, I guess, tapping into the subconscious, or, you know, getting honest with yourself. So, you know, expressing that way in such a creative form without really questioning it, you know, it's sort of like coming face to face with you.
Yes, exactly. And yes, it goes deep into the not taking it personally process. And yes, to be non-judgmental, completely vulnerable is another key word for this chakra. You know, you're in the womb. I always refer back to that place because you're in the water, you're in the womb, and then you come out and you're this like completely vulnerable human being that doesn't have the ability to keep itself alive, really. It relies on its external environment in order to nourish it, to help it stay safe, to know where the boundaries are so you don't, you know, fall off the edge of a cliff or touch a burning stove. You know, those things are necessary to have in our world for a specific amount of time until we can make those discernments ourselves. So it's
understanding that we even form attachments to certain things, but at some point those attachments no longer serve us.
Is that
pretty accurate?
That's accurate. Yeah, exactly. So it's like when we, you know, we're going from age, say, 2, and then we transition into age 3, age 4, age 5, and now we're starting to make a lot more independent decisions, or we're having this desire to be independent and make our own choices, and that goes into the third chakra, where we're starting to claim our identity and our personality. And yeah, so
this how I choose to do this particular thing.
Yeah. And so if there's a bit of a gray area between those, you know, that transition between that allowance too of, for example, is, you know, if you keep a baby in a crib its entire life, well, its entire developmental time, or too much time in the crib, it only knows the boundaries of the crib. It's not able to actually explore its environment and really put things in its mouth. And, you know, we have to watch those things as an adult to the baby. But the fact that they have the opportunity to recognize their environment and learn from it, learn from those senses that they're taking in, that gives them the confidence and the tools to be able to transition into making those more confident choices as they get older and start to form their identity with their environment. So we can become a little bit, if that's hindered in any way, or it's been too overly protected in some respect, and the fear response is, you know, we're more worried about that our worry is taking over, basically, and we're not trusting that the safety, you know, in the confines of a specific space.
Right.
We've kind of prepared the space so that there's no real danger to, say, a baby who can't quite discern yet. But if we confine that too much as an adult, we don't really have the built-in mechanism to be able to discern where the boundaries are. Right. We haven't been teaching ourselves over that developmental time, or have been given the opportunity for that. So now as an adult, we have to kind of learn, you know, where are our boundaries? Where are we going over those boundaries? And knowing how to discern that takes a lot of space and deep breaths and time to be able to feel safe enough to test the waters, you know, dip your toe in. It's like, oh, yeah, it's okay. And then go a little further, and then know that if you want to swim, you know, take the time, and patience and perseverance are another really good aspect of this is understanding that it took 9 months for you to grow. And it takes time for you to learn a skill or to learn something new, or to even take the risk and say you're afraid of water and you want to learn how to swim and conquer that fear. Then you have to go through the process to be able to pass those boundaries or know where they are, and then learn the skills and then go further so that you're not jumping over the cliff without a parachute kind of thing. Well,
This is where they get stuck. This is where most people get, just because it is fluid and it does become really gray. So people haven't had the opportunity or don't really know what it is to take a step back and exercise a little bit of self-care. But my thoughts are always, you need to be honest with yourself, right? Like, you don't even need to be, you don't need to say things to me, your coach or whatever, because you think it sounds good. I'm not interested in, you know, stuff that just sounds good. I'm interested in helping you just be honest with you, understand what your boundaries are. You don't got to be 100%, you know, on fire all the time. certain things need time for unfolding. So when people are, I guess, outgrowing certain attachments, what's the best piece of advice you could give to people?
Well, if it's number one, recognizing what we're attached to, and that usually comes with asking yourself, could I live without it? You know, could I, what's the worst thing that would happen if I didn't have that? If I didn't have that second piece of cheesecake, you know, if I didn't have my house that I live in, you know, what's the worst thing that would happen is a really good question to ask anything that you're afraid of losing. And this goes through a lot of basically self-limiting beliefs that feed those attachments, and the false ideas that we've developed over the things that we think we need, and they're not necessarily true. So it just to take your time and do a little bit of assessment of what is in your life right now. What are the habits that you have created that aren't necessarily feeding the true sense of pleasure or the person that you want to become? And be really gentle in this process as well, because this can be a really vulnerable space, and you can beat yourself up so easily by thinking that you should be something different, or, you know, God, I am so fat, I hate myself, I eat too much, you know, all of those thoughts and ideas that we have to beat ourselves up in order to change anything. It's not actually changing anything. It's just, it's feeding why you're eating too much, or why you're reaching out, or why you're holding on to the things that you think you can't live without.
Perpetuating the cycle, essentially, right?
Perpetuating the cycle. So yeah, exactly. It's what are you feeding? And I guess that's a really good metaphor is, you know, what are you putting in your body? And that in itself, like, how are you watering? How are you nurturing the environment of that seed? And remembering the seeds that you're planting. You know, if you want to plant a willow tree, what does a willow tree need? If you want to plant a space of patience within yourself. What does it require to cultivate patience? And is it hatred? You know, is it self-defeat? Is it, you know, struggle? Are those things true? And you may have learned that maybe your idea of patience is all those things, but what if it was something different? So being open to, right, to being flexible with your ideas, being flexible with your body, being flexible with opening to being vulnerable and allowing new ideas and new environments to be created by asking those questions and challenging those fears.
Awesome. I love this particular chakra. You know me, in medical astrology, the hips pelvic structure is one of my vulnerable body parts. So it's something that I come back to quite often, you know, understanding my own self-esteem and where I've maybe not been kind to myself. And so it's with that I offer that particular wisdom to everybody and being able to recognize that this is one that so many people do struggle with. If somebody wanted to learn a little bit more about who you are, where might they find you?
So I have a website, gardenofbreathing.com, and I post most of my happenings on that page. Also, Facebook is my business source for my business page is Garden of Breathing on there as well. And I have another page called Freedom with Farron, just little tidbits and words of wisdom that I post on there. And yeah, I think those are my two main sites. And of course, they can always contact me. You guys can always contact me through email at farron@gardenofbreathing.com. If you have any questions about what's been talked about today and any more, you know, more questions about specifically your life in general, I do personal life coaching based on the chakra system. And we go into a little more personalized process with you, particularly. There's a lot of P's in that sentence. Personalized process with you, particularly. So we begin to rhyme. So the second chakra is about creativity and poetry and all of those really beautiful, sensual, lovely, you know, feel good things in life. So it's still at play here. So yeah, and those who are listening to, I really invite you to invite that into your world. You know, starting today, it's always a good time to start is right now. And to allow a lot of those, just to slow down a little bit and pay a little bit more attention to the beautiful things that are in your environment and the things that do feel good for you.
Wonderful. Well, so as Farron said, if you have any questions, feel free to email her. You can also visit the anchor.fm website and submit a question that way. We can answer them in subsequent episodes. To find more episodes, you can visit anchor.fm or my own website at www.caduceusinclinedonline.com. Thank you so much again,
Farron. Thank you so much, Mandy.
And we'll join you all in a couple weeks for another episode on Philosophy with Farron. Bye for now.